What's up, everyone? Welcome to Ditto, episode number 2. Super excited to be here. Matt, welcome. How are you today?
I'm doing really great, Ash. How are you?
I'm doing well. Excited to record today. Excited to get back into the rhythm of recording these episodes.
Yeah, I know. I've missed it, and I hope the audience has missed it, most importantly. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm really excited about what we're going to talk about today. I feel like it's a pretty... I feel like most people, if not all, have experienced this to some degree in whatever field 100%. They're in. So I'm excited for you to drop some knowledge on us. And for us to kind of dive into this a little bit more. But Matt... Yeah. Would you like to share with us what we're going to be talking about today?
Yeah. Would it be cool if I became a hip-hop artist, if my name was Knowledge Dropper?
Knowledge Dropper. Yeah.
Or that'd be... K-Dropper, and I could, like, hold the K up like this. Is that cool? Or is that really dumb?
I feel like if you're committed to it, you might get a few followers.
I know, right? I think it would be. Enlightening. Yeah. I have a random question for you before we get into this. Like, really, really random.
Okay.
Ready? Do you do Wordle?
I used to, but I haven't been doing it recently.
You need to get into it again.
Okay.
They have your statistics, right? Like, after you do it, it shows you what your percentage is and everything. I have played it, Ashley, 466 times.
Wow, that's impressive.
I didn't realize that until this morning. I'm at a 95% winning rate, which is pretty good, I think.
All right.
And my max streak is 71.
Wow, that's really impressive.
So I'm going to try to get to 100 here soon. Maybe you should start and we can compete against each other.
Yeah, you don't have a huge head start or anything, but yeah, I'll try and catch up.
We'll see if we can compare, like, starting now and moving forward, we'll compare our stats.
Okay.
But you have to be consistent with it every day, right? There's a new word, so.
Yeah, I know. Okay, maybe Jeff and I used to do it every night together before bed. We would do the Wordle together, so maybe we'll hop back on the train.
Okay, do it. And then let me know. Okay. Should we get into this?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Like Ashley said, everyone, I strongly believe this is something that we all experience. In any domain, whether it's professional or personal, work-related, relationships-related, you name it. And it's called, or at least in pop culture, imposter syndrome. But the literature, at least originally, back in the late 70s, there was an American psychologist, I think it was two people, I think by the name of Pauline Clance and Suzanne Imes, I think is how you say their name. Anyways, late 70s, they first coined this term, and it was imposter phenomenon back then. But nonetheless, what does it mean? I think we've all heard it, and I think at least in my conversations with people, whether they're students or people outside of kind of the literature research realm of things, they say, yeah, I had imposter syndrome when I was in XYZ domain. And like, well, what do you really mean by that? Essentially, this is kind of the definition, at least from Pauline and Suzanne's research back in the 70s when they first started. It's essentially a cognitive belief in yourself that you believe that others overestimate your competence. And so oftentimes this can be described as, I'm going to get found out. Like, we have this weird fear of being found out, essentially being found out that we're not competent, that we're not good enough, that we're not educated enough, that we don't have the right skill set, et cetera, et cetera. And so as a result, we experience this phenomenon of being an imposter. And so, I mean, to give you an example, I heard this a lot, and I even experienced this very, very personally, very real in my PhD program. And I think I've shared this story before, but nonetheless, I think it's a good illustration. Here we go. I remember sitting, it was like the first month of my PhD program, and the teacher in a roundabout way said, you are all here as PhD students because you're A students and school is kind of your thing and has been for many years. And I was like the only one that spoke up and said, not me. It's never been my thing. I've never been an A student. I've been like a B minus student most of my life. I don't know how I got into a PhD program. Anyways, it was complete. I was being fairly facetious at the time, but you know, walking out of that classroom, of course I was like, God, am I an imposter? Like, am I going to get found out that I'm the only non A student in this entire cohort? And so, I mean, that for me was my example, but you can again point to this with business and leadership positions or even management or lower tier positions. You can 100% point to this in sports. And I know Ashley has some experiences that I'm sure she can share here in just a minute. Around again, like, are people going to find out somehow that I'm just not that good? And I maybe even shouldn't even be here. I shouldn't be starting. I shouldn't be scoring as many goals. I shouldn't, et cetera, et cetera. So what does it look like? What are kind of the key ingredients, if you will, to imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon? Here are four, and this is, again, coming from a whole host of literature and stuff that I've gathered over the years, because I find this fascinating that essentially we experience this self-doubt, and it turns into this more of a phenomenon, and we go down these rabbit holes of more imposter-ness. It's just so interesting to me of where our minds can go. And so, again, it's been kind of a reoccurring theme and interest of mine over the years. And so here are some key ingredients to imposter syndrome. And Ashley, of course, I want to get your thoughts on every single one of these and how you have experienced these in your profession of being in professional sport. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's hear them.
Okay. First one, not surprising, is a persistent, keyword, self-doubt. And so let me ask you, Ashley, what role has any kind of self-doubt played in your experience of being a professional athlete? And how have you dealt with that? Go.
Where'd it go? I mean, I feel like I've experienced self-doubt at every single stage of like my career. I think like first and foremost, like my first ever attempt at playing soccer, I think I had a lot of self-doubt just because I didn't understand the positions. Yeah. It was a new experience. I didn't feel like I had the skills that everyone else around me did. I started playing at age 8, which is quote unquote late. A little bit late. Than most players. And so when I started playing, we already had like positions, and my perception of soccer was that you just like run around wherever you want and kick the ball. But my coach was like yelling at me like, stay on the right side. And I was like, why? The ball is over there. So like even from like my very early stages of playing soccer to like trying out for like a varsity team or showing up to my first ever preseason training in college or playing professionally, I feel like at every stage there's levels of self-doubt, but yeah, I would say it's very common to experience self-doubt.
Yeah. And I haven't played professional sport, obviously, but I've worked with quite a few athletes over the years and have read quite a bit of research and literature around this, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to be one of, if not the most common psychological negative themes for athletes, is this self-doubt kind of ideology or component. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% correct. At least from my experience and my experience with like my teammates and stuff and like hearing them express self-doubt. Even though they've accomplished things before, like I think the hardest part is like you've done these things before. Like, let's say starting a new season, for example, like this is my ninth season. Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Oh wow, you're getting old.
No, don't say that word.
I'm just kidding.
This is my
you're getting experienced.
Yes, there you go. Thank you. This is like my ninth season, but I feel like every off season and going into every season, you experience this, I don't know, self-doubt or this just like worry of like, oh, will I be ready? Have I done enough? Am I prepared to start this new season, even though I should be leaning on all my previous experience and using that to give me confidence and feel like, okay, I've done this so many times before, I'm going to be fine. So I feel like that's a skill within itself. But I feel like a lot of players, they've accomplished something and they're going to try and accomplish that thing again. But for some reason, they don't use their past experiences and past successes to help fuel their like faith in themselves to overcome or to accomplish something again.
That I hope everyone heard that, because it's so key. And it's actually something I'm going to mention here towards the end of the episode today, is how to deal with this effectively. And Ashley just said one overarching theme, everybody, that's so vital. And it's actually something we've already talked about in this podcast: past accomplishments. It's so amazing to me to talk to these athletes and to hear this self-doubt. And it seems like they have completely forgotten everything they've accomplished up to that point, especially people at your level, Ashley. It's like, you're there for a reason, Joe Schmo or Sally Schmo. You've think of all the steps that you've had to accomplish to get to where you are. But nonetheless, it's this intermittent kind of persistent experience or phenomenon of self-doubt that you as a human being, we as human beings experience. And it's so, again, unfortunately, amazing to me to see people forget that. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes, everyone, again, you just have to go back psychologically, time travel just a little bit, and go, oh, I have accomplished some things. I have done this before. I've done hard things before. And it's amazing how that one very, very strong source of self-confidence can, in a way, destroy, at least in that moment, that self-doubt so that you can move on and not be debilitated and frozen by it. Am I wrong? Mm-hmm.
No, you're not wrong at all.
So that's one source. And we're going to go over some of these sources in just a minute. But I think that's key, at least especially in answering this first ingredient of a persistent self-doubt that's contributing to this imposter syndrome. You want to hear ingredient number two?
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, and there's four again. Number two is attributing success to external factors. Interesting one. What are your thoughts, Ashley?
I mean, yeah, I feel like I've experienced this. I feel like I've heard other people experience this when you go to like a kind of compliment them or give them a pat on the back for something that they did really well. And their response is, oh, well, it's just because so-and-so didn't do their job. Or, oh, the only reason why I scored a goal is because the keeper slipped and the ball went in. Whether that's right or wrong, it's still doesn't take away from the fact that you accomplished what you accomplished. And I think we give more power to those external factors and therefore take a lot of like power and positivity and excitement away from what we've actually accomplished. And therefore we attribute success to all these external factors instead of building our own self-confidence and building just like our skill set to be able to see like and acknowledge when we've done something well.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think the huge danger in this ingredient is what it does for the individual or individuals moving forward as they go about trying to accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. If you're consistently or persistently attributing success to external factors, the psychological toll and energy that that's going to have moving forward is going to be so negative. And it's, yes, it's this fine balance of humility, right? Mm-hmm. And confidence, but you have to have some sense of that, both of those things, to be able to accomplish anything moving forward. If you're continually attributing success to that person or to that thing, anything outside of you, it's really hard to have any kind of self-belief moving forward.
Yeah, it can become a really dangerous habit really quickly, and it can become a cycle that is really, really hard to break if you get lost in it. And I've definitely gotten lost in it before, but I think you need to be able to acknowledge that and break that cycle so that you can then move forward and attribute your success to like the work that you are putting in.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, this reminds me, this particular ingredient reminds me of growth mindset versus fixed mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as it pertains to the maturation of an individual and the evolution of their skill set within sport, for an example. It's so important, especially from this orientation of being more growth mindset oriented, to praise effort rather than the skill or the ability, because then it's, oh, I didn't have the skill or the ability, that person has more. Again, so you're now externally blaming and attributing things way more often, like you said, and getting in this habit of, oh, it's all them, it's all the other people outside of me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you as the leader, or even within yourself, are saying, look how much freaking effort I put into XYZ, and as a result, I got in second place or first place, or I was top five or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really healthy way, especially from an early age, to stay away from this continually attributing success to external factors. If you can praise the effort persistently, it's going to be so, so helpful. And that is very growth mindset oriented.
Yeah. And as you're talking through this, it reminds me, I'm watching the second season of Sprint right now, Netflix series. And it's so fascinating to watch these athletes competing at the highest level on the highest stage, like the ultimate competition, the Olympics, competing for a gold medal, and hearing what they have to say after, whether they've won, or mostly it's very fascinating to hear what they say after they've like got second or third and we're hoping to get first. A lot of them do a really good job of still being proud of themselves, but also like staying hungry and still wanting more. And a lot of them will talk about the work that they put in to get there and how they're really proud of themselves for being able to get to that point and then compete at that point, give it their all, do their very best, and accept the result, whatever that may be, whether it's in a gold, silver, or a bronze. And I think it just shows the mindset that all of them have. Like, it still sucks when you don't get to where you want to go, but you still have to acknowledge the work that you put in to get there. And you still have to like be proud of yourself for doing what you have done, but it's okay to like still want more. And it's that fine line and that balance of not like being so hard on yourself that you can't move forward. Cause I've seen athletes that are so hard on themselves that it's like impossible for them to move forward because they're just so upset that they didn't get the final result that they wanted, but then they're discrediting and missing like a whole chunk of time and effort and energy that they put in to get there. And so they're not able to really gain anything from the result because they're not able to look back and be proud of what they've put in and what they have accomplished, even though they did fall maybe short of the ultimate goal.
Yeah. Yeah, very well said. I think it really beautifully ties in everything you just said, Ashley, to this next ingredient, which is fear of failure. You know, track and field is such an interesting sport because you don't win a ton and it's so individual. And so in my mind, that fear would seem to be likely very present, but those, especially those track athletes, at least in my opinion, that are really, really good, aren't scared of failing. They just have a really great relationship with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand that not winning all the time is a part of this process, and whether it's in practice or an actual competition. And so here's your third ingredient, people. And I think it's, again, something that we all can relate to, and especially professional athletes. Key ingredient number three, fear of failure. I remember, I'm going to try to paraphrase it. Maybe it was Michael Jordan. Kobe Bryant, one of the greats. It was something along the lines of I can accept failing because everyone fails at anything, but I can't accept not trying.
Mm-hmm.
He can accept failing, but he cannot accept not trying. That's not being scared of failing. And to get to that type of mindset is so, so healthy, because in any sport, you're not going to win all the time. And so when you don't win, it's not going to be this sudden shock to the system. It's just looking at that experience, that so-called failure, as an opportunity to get better. But mm-hmm. it requires a lot of deliberate and consistent practice to get there. And so let me ask you, Ashley, how has your relationship, similar to these track athletes that you were talking about, I think on some level, how has your relationship with failure changed over the years? And how have you, at least hopefully, and in knowing you, I think I could say this confidently, how have you developed a healthy relationship with failure?
I love this question, because I can think of so many experiences where I've allowed the fear of like not winning or failing to like kind of like hold me back, or like, oh, like, is it worth even trying if like the goal is so high and so far away and it's like feels almost impossible. But I love that we're talking about track, because I feel like that's kind of where I first developed this healthy relationship with failure, because I ran track in high school. I actually ran cross country growing up as well. And not to make this about me or brag about myself, but I was pretty good.
I bet you were.
I did win a lot of like cross country meets, especially at like a younger age. And then when I started running in high school, and you run against girls that are older and faster and stronger and better than you, it's like super intimidating. And I kind of had, there was obviously a lot of like positive reinforcement from my family, especially my dad, of like, good job, like you're winning, this is amazing, like keep going. And my young brain was like, oh, they're proud of me because I'm winning, right? And then I would go race against someone that's like faster than me and I would lose, and I was like, oh, they're not going to be proud of me. But then I was met with the response of like, good job, like you tried your best, like keep working, like you'll get there. And that's when kind of it switched in my mind. It's like, oh, they're proud of me for trying and doing something hard, not the final result. And so I feel like that's where I first started to learn that like failure is you not showing up and giving it your best. It's not, failure isn't the final result. And that's a really, when you are a very competitive person and you're competing at the highest level, that's a really hard lesson to learn and to remind yourself over and over when you want that final result so bad. So I feel like this is a lesson that I'm constantly like trying to remind myself, even like day to day with like training. I feel like I was actually talking to Jeff about this in the car on the way home from the airport. He picked me up. We just got back from Florida. But I feel like I used to allow how I perceived that my training session, how it went, to like bleed into like the rest of my day. Like, oh, I didn't score every single goal, or my team in practice didn't win, so therefore it was a complete failure. Like that training session wasn't up to my standard. It's okay to have a high standard, and I've always had a high standard, and you should always have a high standard, especially if you want to play at the highest level. But where it becomes detrimental is if you allow that high standard to kind of like just consume you to the fact where you can't enjoy what you're doing. And if, because we know, we've talked about this before, if you don't enjoy what you're doing and you don't allow yourself to enjoy what you're doing, you're not going to get better. And so it's this fine line of like, okay, I want to compete and I want to succeed, but how do I define success and how do I define failure? And ultimately, winning is a consequence of you doing all the right things, like putting in the work consistently day in and day out. It's not you focusing solely on winning, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was beautiful. We need to rewind that and listen to it again. Here's, again, to add to what Ashley just said, everybody. It's very growth mindset oriented. And essentially what Ashley is describing, correct me if I'm wrong, Ash, is you're in this process of experiencing these experiences as an athlete. You're distancing your identity from the performance and rather attaching your identity and really the effort and sense of motivation itself to effort. Mm-hmm. So rather than identifying to the performance, you're identifying with the effort. That for me is success.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me is developing a healthy relationship with failure. Because even if you failed, if you can go back to that game or that competition and say, golly, but did I give 100%? And you go, yeah. Then you go, okay. Then there we go. They were better then, right? Mm-hmm. Or she was better, or that's why I was benched, or I don't know. But if you can answer that question and attach it to effort, attaching the identity to effort is just so healthy, especially from a mental health standpoint, emotional health standpoint. So it also, I think, bows really well, and or at least couples really well with this last ingredient of perfectionism. It's kind of this, I don't know, if a subcategory, if you will, of fear of failing is perfectionism. This another key ingredient to imposter syndrome. And for me, it's another kind of phenomenon, I think, that we often tend to experience, especially if we're highly competitive people and we want to accomplish things. But again, like fear of failure, for those that are really well accomplished, I'm going to say that they have a very healthy relationship with, quote unquote, being perfect. In other words, they know that being perfect is unattainable. Mm-hmm. But like this growth mindset orientation points in this direction, they know that effort is perfect. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so their perfectionism is tied to effort. Am I giving 100% towards this objective today? That's perfect. Everything mm-hmm. else can't be perfect because there's so many things outside of our control, but perfectionist thinks that they can control a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Anyways, what are your thoughts on some of the perfectionism there?
Yeah, I would say that a lot of us sometimes perceive like perfection as also like comfort. Like if I have everything under control, if everything is perfect, I'm therefore comfortable and things are quote unquote easy. But we all know that's like 100% backwards. If you actually want to get better and you actually want to succeed, you'll find yourself wanting to push yourself out of your comfort zone. You want to learn more. You want to be able to step into environments where maybe you aren't the smartest, the best, the fastest, the strongest, because if you put yourself among others who are better than you, then you will therefore also become better. You will rise to the occasion, or you will be able to like learn from those around you. But we have this perception that like if things are perfect, then I don't need to change. I'm perfect the way that I am. The skills that I have now are the skills that I need to get whatever it is that I'm wanting to work towards. And it's just, it's all backwards, because as I've learned in my career, if I want to continue to get better, I need to be doing different things and challenging myself in different ways. The person that I was as a rookie is not the same person as I am now in my ninth year playing professionally. And so I don't want to be that person. And I also don't want to be the person, I don't always want to be the person that I am now. I want to continue to improve, and I'm experiencing new experiences. So why would I handle them the same way that I did 5-6 years ago? So I think it's just this like reinterpreting what like perfection is, because in my mind, perfection is not having everything together, but like doing your best to see those moments of opportunity where you can like put yourself out there, where you can push yourself to the point of like, okay, like I'm probably going to make a mistake, but I know that this mistake is going to help me learn. And it's a mistake or a lesson that I wouldn't learn if I didn't like put myself out there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And let me ask you, with all your experience, because you are an experienced soccer player.
Yeah.
When did that materialize for you? Because that is like the way to look at this, for, especially from a psychological or mental health standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
When did you finally recognize or were cognizant of that, like, this is the orientation I need to attach myself to?
It's hard to like pinpoint exactly like, oh, this is the moment, but I feel like it's been slowly over time when I've realized the more I expose myself to harder things or do things that kind of push me out of my comfort zone or that are quote unquote scary, those are the times where I feel myself growing. And those are the times that I appreciate the most, because it's helped reshift like my perception of myself and what I am capable of doing. I would say this podcast is a perfect example of that. I think if you remember, we've had many conversations of wanting to start this podcast, but I think both of us experienced this imposter syndrome of like,
totally. Yeah.
It's not going to be perfect, or we don't know how to do a podcast, and I don't have all the answers, but we were like, let's just go for it and we'll learn as we go. And I think developing that learn as we go mindset has bled into like all areas of my life. And I'm finding myself like doing a lot more things, pushing myself more and more out of my comfort zone in all areas of life, because I realize that that's the type of person that I want to be. And that's how I'm going to continue to grow and be my best self. And I also feel like I'm motivated to be my best self for others, for my husband, for my future family, whatever it is. And so if I'm just kind of like cruising and in cruise control and I'm like, okay, I've been playing soccer for 9 years, I know what it takes to get here, then I'm not going to probably be playing for much longer. And so I think adapting that mindset in all areas of life for me has proven time and time again to be the most beneficial.
Yeah. Wow. I love it so much. I have a book recommendation for everybody. It at least indirectly touches on all of these ingredients that we've talked about. It's called Mindset, and it's by Carol Dweck. And her last name is spelled D-W-E-C-K. She is a psychologist at Stanford, and she has essentially spearheaded this literature around growth mindset and fixed mindset. And essentially it's, you know, growth mindset meaning, especially if we're looking from a physical lens, for those that are, maybe it's a little more familiar, we're looking at dynamic versus static. So dynamic being growth, you're continually moving, even if it's just a little step. And then static is fixed. Like, you believe that XYZ isn't going to move, that I'm not going to get better, or I'm at the top of my game, there's no way I can get better from here. And so anyways, for those that are interested and want to read more about it, I could not recommend Mindset by Carol Dweck enough. Fantastic book. It's been kind of a staple in my library, if you will, for the last, I don't know, 10, 12 years. Okay, so to just review quickly, here are your key ingredients. If you're experiencing some of these things, maybe you can relate to all of them or two of them or maybe one of them. Persistent self-doubt, attributing success to external factors, fear of failure, and perfectionism. Now, the last bit of this, Ashley, if you don't mind, I want to jump ahead to some of these mental skills, right? We're coming from, at least myself, a sports psychology lens. And so I think this would be really, really helpful to now give some really kind of applied tidbits, applied action for individuals, especially in those individuals that experience some of these things. So what can you do from a psychological standpoint to change your relationship with your imposter, the imposter phenomenon? And I have four. You ready? So we'll go through these fairly quickly, but Ashley, share an example of, you know, with any of these, please, if you want to. Number one, we've harped on this already, harnessing self-confidence. So essentially finding and unpacking those sources of self-confidence. And if you need to go back to episode
episode numero uno. Yeah,
very first episode. We go over six sources of self-confidence. Quick review, those six sources: past accomplishments, it's something that we were just talking about. Two, vicarious experiences. So you're learning from other people. You're not comparing, but you're learning. Three, verbal persuasion. And so harnessing self-talk within yourself, but also external verbal persuasion. So you're more consistent with what you're taking in from coaches, teammates, loved ones, etc. Number four, imaginal experiences. So you're harnessing this amazing gift of mental rehearsal. So whether it's imagery or visualization, you're seeing what you want to happen before you actually go into the domain. Physical state is number five. So especially for athletes, you know, utilizing this machine that you take to work every day, which is your body, and becoming healthier and stronger and faster. And then the last one, the last source of self-confidence is the emotional state. So harnessing the power of emotional regulation, emotional intelligence, and becoming more cognizant and regulated around what your emotions are doing and what role and what story they're telling you in your life, especially from, if it's negative, you know, flipping that to more helpful positivity within your life. So there's number one, harnessing self-confidence. Number two is an interesting one, and I would love your thoughts on this, Ashley, because I know you've done this at least on some level.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrating small and big wins. So actually writing down and reflecting on some of these small and or big wins. How has that played a role in your life?
It's played a huge role. I think celebrating specifically the small wins has helped me the most, because I feel like we can go day in and day out without acknowledging the progress that we're making. And then when we get to the final like big win, or maybe it's not the result that you wanted, then you feel like a complete and utter failure, or you're like, oh, I'm not good enough or whatever. So celebrating those small wins just kind of fuels you and helps you know that you're like heading in the right direction. I think when you're dealing with an injury, this is when you learn this skill the most, is because you're not able to do what you want to be doing because you physically are not able. And so when you're held out of your sport, you have to be focusing on something, right? The ultimate goal is to now become healthy. And so you actually experience this like psychologically, but also physically. You feel yourself like daily making baby steps. Totally. And so when you acknowledge those, I feel, this is just my personal opinion, there's no science at all behind this, but I feel like that actually helps you get better faster. I feel like when you're focusing on like the daily like small gains, you're then like creating more like hope and faith and positivity and just like overall better energy around this process that you're going through, that is very difficult and very easy to just be very upset and sulk and be negative about it. But if you're celebrating the small wins and the daily little steps, then I feel like you will get to that ultimate goal of wanting to be back on the pitch and healthier a lot sooner. And when you do get back on the pitch, I feel like you have this stronger foundation of like, I am healthy because I've acknowledged all the little steps that my body had to go through to then be able to be back on the pitch. But if you're just holding out until being cleared to be on the pitch, then I feel like you also kind of have this like, am I ready? I don't know. I'm not sure. That's because you didn't acknowledge all the steps that your body and your mind just went through to then be back out on the pitch.
I love all of that. The part I love the most is how that activity can be such a wonderful psychological readiness tool. Mm-hmm. You said, don't wait to celebrate your win till you're done with rehab and you're back out on the pitch. Start preparing now psychologically by celebrating the small wins, by range of motion with your knee, by how much you're squatting, by whatever, so that you psychologically can be prepared for when you actually do accomplish whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, like getting back on the pitch. I love the kind of psychological readiness piece to that. Love it. Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Okay. That was number two. Number three, this one's one of my favorites because I hear this all the time. You're asking yourself, what could go right with the situation? Not what could go wrong. I think we way more than we should be asking ourselves, oh, what if this happens, or what if this goes wrong, or what about this, or what? It's like, well, flip the coin. What could go great? What could go right? What if you do actually succeed? What if you surpass your goals? Like, start to shift, kind of what Ashley was saying, shift perspective of what you're asking yourself and what you're saying to yourself, especially in terms of, well, what could actually go right? Because we tend to, especially with this imposter syndrome or phenomenon, ask what could go wrong way more than we should. That's contributing or feeding this syndrome or this phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then this last one, we've talked about it. It was in the ingredient, changing relationship with failure. So you're accepting the reality of your situation. You're not being Mr. or Mrs. Positivity and clouding everything that's negative outside of your life. You're just accepting what's going on. And that most importantly, you're accepting that perfect is unattainable, but you're attaching yourself to the perfection of effort and putting more time and focus in the effort, not in the wins or losses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to wind down now. We're going to kind of slowly tie a bow on this because I think I've covered, or we've covered, a lot of kind of the things we wanted to. Would you agree, Ash?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, definitely.
Here's kind of my winding down thought. And then we're going to go over, of course, our ditto of the day, our DOTD. So here's my last thought. Based off of these mental skills that we just shared with you, I want you to reflect on kind of your own imposter. Become familiar with that internal imposter, because I know we all have it on some level. Accept it, recognize it's there, and then do something about it. Apply some of these principles or some of these mental skills that we just talked about. Sound good? Okay. Ashley, what final thoughts do you have, and kind of go into your DOTD?
Yeah, I love that. I love that what you just said about finding your own imposter. I feel like a lot of life and the process of life is also just learning more and more about yourself. The beautiful thing about life is that we're constantly changing, we're constantly evolving, we're constantly learning and growing. And so I think the more that you can learn about yourself and your tendencies or the way that you think or the way that you approach situations, then you'll have this ability to better recognize this imposter and not let it get in your way, or to use it to your benefit by acknowledging it. So I think all the themes that you shared of like how to overcome imposter syndrome are just so applicable to a lot of things in life. So I know that we're going to be seeing a lot of these themes and these resources and like over and over throughout this season. So I'm excited to go back and reference them. But I think as we go into my ditto of the day, I think I'll have to say what you said in number two is celebrating your small and big wins. I think celebrating small wins is such a good habit to get in life in general. I feel like if you're not reflecting on your day, even if it's just a normal average day, I think you're missing out on those small wins. A lot of the times before I go to bed, I have a small journal that I have that has like little prompts in it, and it will just tell me like, what happened today? How did you feel? What's something you're grateful for? Like really, really small things. But I feel like that, like in that moment, I'm able to reflect on the day and pick out the small wins or appreciate the things that may seem like mundane, but they're actually like really important and really special and small wins that really amount to a lot of my joy and happiness. So I think for me, my ditto of the day is recognizing those small wins.
Beautiful. I think it's so, so helpful. I'm going to similarly lean on some of these mental skills for my ditto of the day for y'all. And that is harnessing more self-confidence to combat or change our relationship with this imposter in our lives. And so my invitation or my ditto of the day is to pick a source of self-confidence, and I want it applied in your life. My favorite source, and really the strongest source of the six that we listed previously, is finding past accomplishments, big or small, reflecting on those, and then finding the crossover, the relatedness from that accomplishment to what you're trying to do or what you're trying to accomplish now, and apply it and utilize that power. So there's my ditto of the dirt.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
We're going to put the book that you recommended by Carol Dweck, Mindset. We're going to put that in the show notes, and we're going to be doing a better job of adding those notes so that people can reference the things, mostly the amazing books that Matt recommends. One day, maybe I'll contribute something to the post show notes, but, but.
Awesome conversation, Ash. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We're excited to continue to record. We have a few amazing guests in the pipeline that we're really excited about. So make sure you like, subscribe, share all the wonderful things so that you don't miss out and so that all your friends don't miss out. And thanks for listening.
Ditto. Have a great day.
Ditto out.
Out.